To the people of Honolulu, Waikiki, Kanaoe, and Wahiawa, Hawaii, I send this podcast out to you. My name is Dennis Mann. I'm actually recording this on the East Coast of the United States in New York. And the reason I'm doing this is because over 20 years ago, a family friend, the Mataferi family of mine, they have a daughter named Kristen, who's 18 years old. And she was abducted from San Francisco, Oakland Bay area on June 23rd, 1997. And I believe, this is just me speaking for myself, that a resident of your area has information on this abduction. His name is John Onuma. So what I want to do is do a series of podcasts letting you know about the Kristen Mataferi's case and why I think John Onuma has information. I know he's involved in it, positive 100% of that, but I don't think he's come clean and told us everything he knows. And to be very honest with you, the reason I'm doing this podcast is that the FBI once told me that people always talk. And so I'm rolling the dice here. I'm hoping in the last 20 years, this John Onuma character has spoken to some people. Now, he's been living in, like I say, Honolulu, Waikiki, Kanaoe, and Wahiawa. So this is the area that I need to get this podcast out to. There's a website called findkristen.com, K-R-I-S-T-E-N, and you can go watch the America's Most Wanted video on that website. But for most of all right now, I just want to take a couple minutes to give you a brief overview of the case, and then hopefully, if you know John Onuma, or if you know somebody that had run-ins with this guy, my big goal is that you'll contact us. It's on the website, but my phone number, you can always just replay this podcast, is 914-483-7214. My email is Dennis, D-E-N-N-I-S, Mann, M-A-H-O-N, Dennis Mann at yahoo.com. All right, thanks. With that said, let's roll the clock back 21 years almost, and it's in the summer of 1997. Kristen Mataferi was a really, really smart high school student. She did so well that she earned a four-year academic scholarship to North Carolina State University in Raleigh, North Carolina. And more than that, she graduated from high school in 3 years. So by the time she reached her 18th birthday, Kristen had already completed her freshman year at NC State. And the professors at NC State, they were encouraging their students in the summer, don't just sit around and do nothing. Go out and explore. Go somewhere and just enjoy what life has to offer. And Kristen had always wanted to go to San Francisco. And for the first time in her young life, this was very important to her. She wanted to live on her own. She wanted to get her own apartment. She wanted to get a part-time job in the Bay Area. And her idea was also to take a couple classes at Berkeley, which is right outside of San Francisco. And she checked with her professors, and the classes, the electives that she was taking would transfer towards her degree back east. So this was a great opportunity for Kristen. And, you know, she asked her parents if she can go. Of course, they said no. And they told her no 1,000 times. But behind the scenes, you know, Kristen's mom and dad, Bob and Debbie, they looked at each other and said, you know, our daughter's been nothing but a sense of pride and joy for us. And this is really important to her. We'll let her go. So they sat her down one day and said, Kristen, we're going to let you go, but you got to be careful. And they hammered that into her. And she said, Mom, I'll be okay. I promise you. So on June 1st of 1997, which was Kristen's 18th birthday, she boarded a plane at Charlotte Douglas International Airport in Charlotte, bound for Oakland, California. And she had already pre-secured a room for rent in Oakland. The rents in San Francisco were just way too high. And in no time, the next day, Kristen was pounding the streets of the Bay Area with her resume in hand, handing out resumes everywhere. And in no time, she secured a job at Spinelli's Coffee in the Crocker Galleria, which is in the financial district of downtown San Francisco. And the manager there was a woman named Bernadette Melvin. And she later told us, she said, Dennis, when Kristen came in, we didn't have an opening for her. But, you know, gosh darn it, I liked her so much and her youthful exuberance. I knew what she was trying to do with her life. I said, Kristen, we'll make hours for you. Come on, you're hired. And so they were able to hire Kristen part-time. but she needed to work 40 hours a week to support herself. So she kept on putting resumes out, and she got a second job, also at a coffee shop at the Museum of Modern Art in the cafeteria there. So if the timeline is very important, just all you have to remember is June 1st and June 24th. Kristen lands in Oakland on June 1st, and her classes at Berkeley start on June 24th. And remember, she had quickly secured a couple jobs. So she knew that when June 24th hit, her day of touring the city were over, because between work and school and sleep, that was her time. So she had 3 weeks to work the 7 to 3:30 shift, and then from 3:30 to about midnight, Kristen was out exploring the Bay Area, doing what teenagers do, you know. And this was not a problem child. We're talking the other end of the spectrum. This was a good kid. She was just trying to enjoy life at a young age, and she was trying to be very responsible. So on June 23rd, she knew that the gig was up. She goes, "Oh my gosh, I got to start class tomorrow." She goes, "Tonight's my last night of freedom." And she was talking to her coworkers. She said, "Guys, what should I do? I got one night left." And all the coworkers sat around. They started throwing ideas at her, but she had done most of what they already suggested. And when she left work that day, she wasn't really sure what she was going to do, but she told one of the coworkers that she was thinking about going out to Land's End Beach. It's a popular resort beach out there in San Francisco. And she left work that day, walked out, and about 45 minutes later, she was seen on the second floor of the mall walking casually with a young blonde-haired woman. And her coworkers explained it like it was somebody that looked just like Kristen, just a young college kid, nicely dressed with a backpack on. And they were just casually walking along the mall. And then that was the last anybody ever seen of Kristen, you know. But the reason why I want to get this podcast out to you is because a couple weeks into this, a TV station in San Francisco, KGO, got an anonymous phone call. And the caller, it was a male, said that Kristen was killed by two lesbian women, in a car on the corner, at the intersection of Market Street, which is the main street downtown San Francisco, and Castro. And they had taken Kristen, they'd driven her body over the Golden Gate Bridge up to Point Reyes, the National Forest, and they hid her body underneath a wooden bridge up there. And right before the caller hung up, he said, "By the way, one of those women in the car that killed her was a woman that worked at the YMCA in San Francisco." And then the caller hung up. So, of course, KGO calls the Oakland police and enter Detective Patrick Mahaney, or Officer Patrick Mahaney. And he's a street smart guy. And him and his partner, Sergeant John Bradley, the first thing they do is they head over to the Y and they meet these women. And so the women were real. But cops are street smart, and they could tell in 2 seconds that the woman had nothing to do with Kristen's case. So they said, so they asked the woman, "So who would put you up to this?" And in a nanosecond, they responded, "You got to check this idiot out named John Anuma." And Anuma at the time was dating a girl named Jill Lampo, who worked at the Y. And Anuma and Jill Lampo were living together in an apartment on O'Farrell Street. And Anuma was your basic hothead. He used to come into where Jill worked at the YMCA, and he used to threaten Jill's bosses, those two women, for perceived mistreatment of his girlfriend. And basically he would threaten their lives, say, "If you ever mess with my girlfriend, I'll kill you," stuff like that. And the girls knew he was a hothead, and so they told the officers that. So Officer Mahaney and John Bradley, they head over to the O'Farrell Street apartment, and when they knocked on the door, they had the tape recorder running in their pocket. And if you go to the America's Most Wanted video clip on findkristen.com, you can hear that tape recording. At first, Anuma denies he had anything to do with this. And then somehow, God bless Mahaney and Bradley, I don't know how they did it, but somehow they've got Anuma to flip. And he went from denying that he had anything to do with it to doing a 180 and bragging and boasting. You can hear his voice. He goes, "Of course I did it." He says it right in the video. But he says, "You know, I was just kidding around. I thought it was funny." So, you know, Anuma's never been arrested. He hasn't been arrested for Kristen's abduction. He hasn't been arrested for making an anonymous phone call and leading police on a goose chase, if he's telling the truth, you know. But in the preceding 21 years that have gone, every time there's a major news story about Kristen's case on national TV, invariably I'd be getting a phone call from women that were assaulted by this guy, because thanks to Google, they'd go to what they see him on TV or whatever, or they would Google his name, up would come the Fine Kristen website, and they'd contact me. And so I've got a whole Rolodex of women out there. It's almost like the Harvey Weinstein syndrome, you know? A couple come forward, and then they're all coming forward. And that was, more than anything, what gave me the idea to do this podcast. So I know about 9 or 10 women that he's assaulted. But it wouldn't surprise me if there's like 90 or 100 women out there. And so I'm hoping that my voice reaches women in that area. If you had a run-in with Onuma, we need to hear from you, okay? And if you go to findkristen.com, if you scroll down to the bottom, you're going to see a handwritten letter. This is very, very important. This happened in 2015. Okay, Kristen disappeared in 97. I'm sorry, this happened in 2012. Kristen disappeared in 97. So we're 15 years after Kristen disappeared. Jill Lampo, who's no longer dating Onuma, has a nervous breakdown. And she calls her uncle on the phone one day, and it was described to me as a several hours long phone call. And she starts doing a life dump on her uncle, but all the things that are wrong with her life, beginning from literally the day she was born until just that call. And I'm grateful to the uncle because he realized this was not your normal phone call. And as he's talking to his niece, he gets out a pen and paper and he starts jotting down notes. And when the phone call was over, the uncle said to his wife, he said, "Wow, Jill just told me enough to put her away in prison for the rest of her life." And the wife started asking, "Well, who's this Kristen Modafferi?" And the husband said, "Well, I don't know. I don't want to get involved." Well, thank God the wife, Kelly Williams, her name was Kelly Romo at the time. She divorced him. But she knew this was important. And she Googled Kristen Modafferi, found my website, and contacted me and told me the story. And she made copies of the handwritten letter from the phone call between Onuma, or between Jill Lampo, which was Onuma's girlfriend, and Jill's uncle. And she sent me those emails, and I gave them to the Modafferi family, the Oakland police, and the FBI, so they all have them. And it's a little hard to read, so I transcribed it. But you'll see on there, it says, while she was in San Francisco, she was convinced to assist in an unspeakable kidnap and murder. Now, she didn't mention Kristen Modafferi by name in that letter. But while she was in San Francisco, she only had that one boyfriend that I know of, Onuma. All right? There was one other guy before him, and we'll talk, a guy by the name of Matthew LeCue. We'll talk about him in an upcoming podcast. But to my knowledge, Kristen is the only one that went missing while she was dating these guys. So now you know about 1% of the story. So I want to thank you for listening. He lived in Kanahoe for a while. He lived in Honolulu. He's in Waihiawa right now. And if you know anybody, or if you know any websites, please refer this podcast to them. And remember this podcast, because I'm going to keep on posting. And I'm going to try to see if some of these women that he sexually assaulted or threatened to kill, I'll see if they agree to do a podcast. They may say yes. They may say no. A lot of times what happens is the women will say yes, and then when it comes time to do the podcast, you know, they don't want to come forward. I mean, I have to respect their wishes, so it's not something I could push on them. All right, everybody, thank you very much. And remember, John Onuma, if you go to the website, just watch the America's Most Wanted video. You'll get a good summary of the case. All right? Thank you.